Hi there. I'm Paul Boger, host of KNPR State of Nevada. Enjoy this conversation from the show. If you like it, please follow us, and thanks.
Marijuana is no longer classified with the most dangerous drugs, at least on the medical side of things. Last week, the federal government took guidance from a Trump administration executive order and reclassified FDA-approved cannabis and medical licensed marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. It still remains illegal under federal law, and recreational marijuana remains a Schedule 1 drug. However, the reclassification allows for certain tax deductions for medical licensees. It also allows research opportunities for universities, and it may open the door for recreational marijuana to be reclassified as well in the future. So how will the change affect Nevada's cannabis industry? We've got somebody who could answer that question. Rihanna Durrett is director of UNLV's Cannabis Policy Institute. She's also the vice chair of Nevada's Cannabis Compliance Board, an attorney, and a UNLV law professor of cannabis law and regulation. Rihanna, it's good to chat with you.
Hi, Paul. That was a great summary of what the order does.
I appreciate it. So let's talk about why the federal government classifies drugs under the five schedule system.
Okay. Under the Controlled Substances Act, the United States classifies drugs in order of basically their seriousness. It's whether they have medical benefits and whether they are subject to abuse. We do this in compliance with an international treaty. The UN Single Convention on Narcotics established this treaty system, which is kind of a legal anomaly. And some people think that you can't really delegate your lawmaking authority to treaties. So it's a very dense legal subject. But that's why that's partly why it's so difficult to reschedule.
So why was cannabis placed in that Schedule 1 in the first place?
Yeah, it's historically shocking how much evidence there was that cannabis did not belong in Schedule 1. There were entire national commissions. There was something called the LaGuardia Report that said this isn't being treated appropriately. And despite all that, lawmakers at the time went ahead and put it as a Schedule 1. Again, very dense history. A lot of people name Harry Anslinger as the main person responsible for a lot of the vilification of it. And then, of course, we had the war on drugs, and Nixon's presidential administration found it, or his campaign found it very helpful to vilify cannabis and kind of make it us versus them.
Gotcha. So what was behind the federal government's change of heart? Cannabis has been legal among the states, many states, for decades now in many cases. So why did they all of a sudden decide marijuana should be reclassified as Schedule 3?
I think it's so supported around the country. Other countries are legalizing as well. It's a lot of this history and a lot of the reason it was Schedule 1 have been uncovered as not reliable science, not reliable evidence. There's been a lot of advocacy around this area. There are brilliant scientists all around the world showing that it has significant medical benefits. And that's really been embraced by this administration. In the executive order, I would love to know who actually wrote the executive order, because they love medical marijuana and they really support it. You know, we have brilliant scientists at UNLV. We have Dr. Dustin and Rochelle Hines doing work that shows that cannabis could be a cure for some rare childhood diseases, et cetera. So I think the move has been from the amazing amount of support for legalization.
You know, Nevada has both recreational and medical marijuana. Does that change anything in the short run for the state's medical industry?
So this is so interesting. And there's the executive order from December from the president's office. And then from the U.S. Attorney General, there is an order saying, okay, I'm rescheduling it. I have the authority to reschedule it under this treaty. Under the Attorney General's order, it's 33 pages. So I have more questions than I have answers As an attorney, I think I have full job security. Accountants are going to have full job security. The headlines are that it eases research, doesn't open the floodgates, but it eases research and it takes away a tax penalty. It doesn't take away a federal tax that the industry pays, but it takes away a tax penalty that they pay. So they have more going out the door, more money going out the door to the federal government and less coming back than other businesses. So it takes away that penalty. It provides some relief. Now, there's a couple catches here. One, it only applies to medical for now. There's a hearing in June where maybe that'll be broadened, but say it stays medical only. Well, medical markets have shrunk a lot since recreational was legalized. So that's a much smaller piece of the pie. Although I imagine most states will be saying, okay, how do we shift back into our medical license programs? And then another caveat is that Nevada has dual licenses. We no longer have medical licenses. We have medical and adult use licenses. So how does this impact Nevada's licenses? I'm sure eventually all of this will be worked out. It could take some time. We may get some answers when they go to do this DEA registration that's required under the U.S. Attorney General's order. They may find out at that time whether or not they're allowed to register as a dual license. And maybe guidance will come out from the IRS. It seems unlikely that they'll say, don't worry, we're going to give you as much tax relief as we possibly can. So maybe they'll provide guidance, or maybe our licensees will find out when they go to apply for when they file their returns. And in addition, I think there will be some discussions in Nevada about how to reframe our license program as more medically oriented.
It sounds like at this point, there are more questions than answers. I do want to go back to something you talked about kind of at the top of that question. Let's focus on the research aspect of it. As you mentioned, this is kind of where the headlines are focused on the universities, the research. What could universities do before this reclassification? What can they focus on now?
Yeah, I've been asking. I started at UNLV 3 years ago, and I've been asking everybody I know in this world, what's the difference between Schedule I registration and Schedule III registration protocols? What is the practical difference? And the guidelines to actually do Schedule I research, it's 100 pages. So you would, there are a lot of details that there's just not a concrete list of the differences between Schedule I and Schedule III research, but I can tell you in general, the requirements are less onerous. It will be easier for researchers to get access. Another thing the order does is it allows researchers to obtain medical marijuana from the state license market. That is a huge shift for researchers. They've only been able to obtain it from about 7 nationally registered or federally registered sources. I've heard complaints about that, the consistency and the quality of those products. Sorry, those 7 sources. The state license market has what people are consuming. And so to allow researchers to now obtain what people are actually consuming is a huge change. It'll take a while for all of this to work itself out. But that is, for the actual efficacy of this research, that's a game changer.
Another change would be coming from the Justice Department. They're calling for a broader rescheduling of marijuana. Now, what does that suggest? Should, you know, people expect that there's going to be a broader rescheduling coming?
Yeah, I can see it happening either way. It'd be surprising either way. It'd be really surprising if they put all this time and effort into medical, and they're clearly, this administration is focused on medical. There's everyone supports medical cannabis research. All right. The current president, the past president, both political parties support it. Scientists support it. Even people who are against legalization support it. So everybody supports research, and the focus has been on medical. So I can see why, you know, I could see this June hearing coming and not really getting a much broader legalization. But on the other hand, it's hard to kind of reconcile this. we live in a country where alcohol is legal. We do live in a country where people can choose to take intoxicating substances. That's just the country we live in. They can choose to do that because alcohol is legal. And, you know, nicotine and tobacco are legal. We allowed adults to make that decision. So there's maybe not good reasons. I mean, I'm sure some people would argue there are, but there's maybe not good reasons to draw that line at cannabis when it does have positive medical benefits. So I could also kind of see, although like I said, either way, it would be surprising. I could see June 29 saying, yeah, we're going to treat the rest of it like alcohol. It's going to be regulated. We're making the steps to support research. We do need more research, but we're going to treat it more like alcohol.
Rihanna, we got about 30 seconds left. You know, what about banking? You know, there's so much that's been going on, so much conversation about banking. Is there maybe a possibility that we could see marijuana companies be able to access the banks at this point?
Yeah. So when this order first came out, it kind of looked like, okay, all this does is it allows the state markets, the medical markets, to be legal. It's very limited. But then thinking about it, I realized, and I think it started to dawn on the legal community, no, this is a pathway for these medical licensed operations to be legal. So everything that's legal comes along with that. Banking, interstate commerce, that's huge. You don't tell people they can't transport their medicine across state lines. You don't tell businesses that they can't transport legal products across state lines. So we could see interstate commerce opening it up. The order also addresses import and export.
Rihanna Durrett is the director of UNLV's Cannabis Policy Institute. Rihanna, thank you.
Thank you.